Speaking of Reliability, a podcast with good friends talking with you about reliability engineering topics. Let's discuss how to create and improve your reliability program and your career. Well, welcome to Speaking of Reliability. Again, I'm joined by Tim Rogers. And our general theme for our discussions have been supply chain. And we're making a list. We're sharing a document that has a list of topics. And one of the sources of those topics is our own experience. But a more useful source for these things is questions and comments that we see either on LinkedIn or sent directly to us. You could also put the comments and stuff in the show in the comments area under the episode or on a review in iTunes or other places we hope to get this posted. The question though, that one of you sent in to us recently was one that I've heard over the years from many different people, so it's not surprising that it's one of the first questions we get, was basically, what do I do when my organization is focused on getting the low-cost supplier or working with suppliers to reduce costs? You know, and Tim, I'm sure you've been in organizations or have seen this. You know, what causes that to happen? Why would somebody want to go with the low-cost supplier?
Yeah, Fred, I think the biggest problem is that it's the easiest thing to measure. You know, just if you want to look at how your purchasing organization is performing, probably the easiest thing to measure is how much money they're spending.
Mm-hmm. And they spend a lot of money.
Yeah, it is. But I guess what I would argue is that it's not their only contribution. You can think of all kinds of possible examples where buying the lowest cost part or the lowest going with the lowest bid is not always the right thing to do. But because the purchase price is the easiest thing to measure, that's the thing that we tend to focus on. I don't know if you've been involved, Fred, in trying to do cost of quality measurements.
Oh, certainly.
Or cost of reliability measurements.
Oh, yeah.
But it's hard. It's hard to get at cost of quality. Everybody understands warranty cost. Everybody understands the cost of a field failure. And so you can assign a cost to that. And you can say, well, how did this happen? How did our purchasing organization allow these defective or subpar parts to make it into our product? Well, again, if their incentives are all around a purchasing price, then they're going to be feeling a lot of pressure to look for low-cost suppliers. And this thing extends throughout the supply chain. So the suppliers then are businesses of their own. Suppliers are trying to make a profit just like you are. And if they're being squeezed on price because they're being asked to provide price reductions over time, or they know that they're bidding competitively against other suppliers, in order for them to continue to make some kind of profit, they're going to make decisions to manage their internal cost. And unfortunately, some of the decisions that they might make in order to reduce their internal cost may be detrimental to your product quality and reliability.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm sure, I mean, you, Tim, have seen this, and I'm sure the listener and the people that have voiced this question in the past have seen this, is where they get the argument, well, it's the same form, fit, and function, but it costs 10 cents less, so we'll save so much money on the overall part. Yet what you just alluded to is this cost of unreliability or cost of quality problems is, even though people will nod their head and say, yeah, I understand that, it's often not part of that purchase decision when working with a supplier. And one of the things we've done in the past, and I'm sure, you know, I know you've seen this, Tim, is is quantify that the issues that we have in the field, the cost of failures, the cost of warranty.
Right.
That's after the fact. You know, it's easy to go fix something when you know about it already. Yet even when you're creating a new product or you're bringing in a new system and you're looking at certain uptime characteristics of it, and you know what the cost of downtime is, or you know what the cost per failure is then change the units of it. Make it a cost per unit shipped or cost per shift of operation.
Right.
So that now it's in the same units. When you do it cost per unit shipped, it's the same units of measure in dollars as the purchase price.
Right. I see your point.
Yeah. And so if I went to a procurement organization and they're saying, well, this is the most expensive part, and so we're trying to reduce it. And I say, well, if that leads to more failures, here's the change in failure rate, and here's the cost of that change that you got to add back into that part cost.
Exactly. And that's the dialogue that needs to happen, Fred. I think, unfortunately, it doesn't happen very often. You know, we put pressure on the purchasing organization to look for lower cost suppliers or to squeeze their existing suppliers on price. But we don't really understand what's driving that lower price. So if we have an existing supplier and we're paying a dollar a part and we're looking for a 10% reduction, we need the supplier to give us 90 cents per part instead.
Right.
We need to ask them where that 10 cents is coming from. I mean, is that what are they doing in order to achieve that lower price? Are they making decisions that are going to hurt us in the long term when it comes to reliability and quality?
Well, that goes back to one of our earlier discussions, though, is a lot of times we just don't know the impact of their process changes.
That's right.
If they change the curing time by a small amount and they show you evidence that it still has the same adhesion, for example, on a gluing process strength, what we don't know is that, well, now it's more susceptible to oxidation, but it takes 6 months for that to break down the adhesive.
Right, right.
Right? So unless you're a chemist in adhesives, you may not know that. But you mentioned it in one of the earlier discussions, is it's the risk identification and FMEA and so on. Mm-hmm. I don't remember the procurement folks being invited to too many of those meetings. They're always having lunches with suppliers.
Or the supplier, for that matter.
That's true, right? Yeah.
And again, I think that's where more enlightened product development teams have an edge, is they do involve suppliers and the purchasing organization in those conversations. Because, again, if you're building everything in-house, this is not a big deal. Mm-hmm. But we're talking about decisions and actions that are going to be taken by suppliers who are quite distant from your location. And you need to give
not only location, but also from design intent and how you're using the part, all those things, yeah.
Exactly right, exactly right. So, again, I'll come back to what I was saying before. Suppliers are businesses also, and they're looking to make a profit. And so if we continue to push on them for cost reductions or price reductions, we need to understand where that's coming from, and we need to be able to assess that. You're absolutely right, Fred. It's complicated, and there may be missing knowledge or information on both sides of the table. But we shouldn't just automatically assume that a lower price is not going to be accompanied by additional risk in reliability and quality.
That's right. That's right. I'm biting my tongue because I actually had a procurement engineer come to my desk one time and ask me, and he was confused as why he was even talking to me. And at that time, I was a reliability engineer in the organization. And I said, well, let's take a quick look at the data sheets. And so you're going to save a nickel and it doubles the failure rate. And how many of those components are in the box? Okay, blah, blah, blah. And we used just a, you know, back of the envelope couple of estimates. And we figured out that the nickel savings would save them like $50,000 a year and was a piece of them getting their bonus, the procurement organization. It was in the right direction, cost savings on purchase price. And so I said, well, you know, when this box fails, it costs us about 2.5 times the retail price to deal with the warranty. And so doubling the failure rate for this one component, blah, 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 works out that it'll cost us $600,000 per year.
Wow.
You know, and so what about our profit?
You know? and that should be what we're paying attention to. So again, we're measuring the wrong things if we hold a purchasing organization accountable only for the purchase price of the product. Price of the part. We also need to make sure that there's some accountability for overall cost, you know, to things like reliability and returns. Otherwise, we've got organizations working at cross purposes, and it's not good for the business as a whole. The other problem that we have is that, I mentioned this earlier, it's easy to measure the purchase price of the part. Mm-hmm. In that conversation, Fred, that you had with the purchasing person, I'm sure that you had to make some estimate about the probability of failure.
Right.
Right.
Oh, it was on the data sheet. It was a field effect transistor, and it was right on the data sheet.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It was easy.
Well, that's a lot better than I've been involved in a lot of those conversations where the probability of failure is a guess.
It is a
guess that's based on knowledge and analysis and good engineering judgment. But my point is that it's not a hard number in the same way that purchase price is a hard number.
All right. And it's also not today. I pay the purchase price today.
Yes. Good point.
The warranty is 6 months, a year, 2 years from now.
Good point. Very good point. So I think that's another reason why these conversations don't always go the way we would like them to go, because we're talking about hard cash. We're talking about money that we're spending today on parts versus a probability, a possibility that there may be a failure at some point in the future.
Well, when you put it that way,
businesses, yeah, this is the kind of thing that businesses struggle with all the time. How do you properly assess the impact of a low probability but high impact event?
Well,
and how do you trade that off?
Toyota or GM or
exactly,
you know, or Boeing or
name your
major recall that happened recently.
Because they're making decisions that optimize around today's cost, and they minimize the impact of future events.
Well, the hard part, and I think it's the only real thing we can do as a reliability professional or as somebody that's in an organization that sees this issue, is highlight where that cost is, the impact of that cost.
Make it
visible. Make it part of the discussion.
And that's why I would ask that if we're pushing for lower price, we need to understand where that is going to come from.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
You know, what part changes, what process changes is the supplier going to take in order to achieve that lower price? Because we need to assess the impact of those part changes and process changes on our reliability. You know, we used to say all the time, you don't make unauthorized changes to the design.
Right.
When we deliver a design to a supplier, it's a big, big, big no-no for a supplier to do anything to change that design once it's been released.
That's right.
But we don't always ask what the supplier is going to do in order to achieve lower price. You know, we assume that they're somehow going to, I don't know, they're going to find some money in a sofa somewhere, you know, and that's how they're going to, you know, find some loose change laying on the floor.
Right.
And that's how they're going to achieve the lower price.
Well, you know, and some of it, Tim, comes from many, many years of the lean movement in quality and just quality improvements of processes. Is we get rid of work in progress, we get rid of inventory, we get rid of wasted motion and so on. And that really did save time and money.
Absolutely. And those are great ways. Those opportunities still exist. But we want to, if we don't ask, we may be surprised to find out later that a supplier has substituted a lower cost part or they have changed their process in such a way that it creates a reliability risk. And so we got to ask that question. We got to understand, what are you doing to reduce, what exactly are you doing to reduce price? Is it coming from margin? Is it coming from a better application of Lean or Six Sigma principles? Or is it coming from a place that's going to create more risk in reliability?
Right. Yeah. Oh, excellent points. It's we work in a world where we've got things we can measure directly, and plus this, not the richest communication that we would like to have with each of our suppliers,
right,
about a range of different things. So it's a couple of those things that create this scenario that our suppliers are forced to make changes that may not be in the best interest of the long-term reliability for our customers.
Right.
And I think the only real thing we can do about it is as a reliability professional or as a conscientious procurement engineer, and I apologize to him, I usually pick on procurement engineers, sort of like lawyer jokes. But it's a lot of us, all of us, I imagine, at some level want to do the right thing. So some of it is having knowledge of what is the right thing or what are the consequences of various choices, and then making it visible. What's the consequence of our decisions?
And you said it at the very beginning, Fred. How do we make sure that the right performance measures are in place? Again, if the purchasing team is being measured on cost savings, that's fine. You know, I have no problem with that. But that cost savings cannot be only around purchase price. It's got to reflect the other components of the overall cost to the product.
That's right.
We may end up rewarding the purchasing team for spending more money on a per part basis in order to save money overall on warranty and fuel failures.
Wow, now you're just a heretic, Tim. They're not going to let you back into the procurement world after this.
But that's what enlightened organizations are going to do. They're going to need to look at this from a more holistic standpoint, you mm-hmm. know, that it has to reflect total cost, not just the cost of the part. Everybody has stories of what happens when you give when you award business to the lowest bidder. And so, you know, we need to think in those terms when we look at this drive for cost reduction.
Yeah, certainly do. Great summary. So let's wrap it up there. I think you just summarized it beautifully. And this whole discussion was prompted on questions that both Tim and I have seen in the past and that we wanted to address early in this thing. And it's one that we've seen recently. So if you've got a question or a topic that you'd like us to explore, join the conversation. Let us know. Leave a comment or a review, or just send us a note directly. We'll love to talk about that. Let's sit down and have a cup of coffee and talk about how we can make our reliability programs better. And that's what this show is about. So with that, Tim, let's go ahead and sign off. I'm tempted to say, well, we've got three or four other shows out of this one, but I'm taking notes, so we'll come back to it.
You're very welcome, Fred.
All right. Take care, Tim. Have a great day.
You too.
Thanks for listening to Speaking of Reliability. We invite you to join the conversation. If you have a question or a topic that you think we should discuss in a future show, please let us know. You can find a comment box below the episode show notes, or just leave a note as part of a review on iTunes.